because it's pretty competitive out there, you know, to keep your attention. So I hope I don't bore you. And that is my public prayer to everyone that's here. But if I do, just like, boom in, rabbi, that sucks. Okay, so you could do that. I'm fine. It's an open home. I'm totally fine with that. Okay. I am in the camera. My stomach's not, so that's fantastic. Trying really hard, but somehow I'm putting on more weight when I diet instead of losing it. I don't know what's going on. It's just my age. I'm 36. I'm as old as many people are. Okay. I'm joking. I'm not old. 36 isn't. Shouldn't be. No excuses. Gotta stop eating those cakes and stuff. All right, so I'm really, really happy to have everyone here, and hopefully we have a good conversation tonight. So for the past 32 weeks, that's a long time, and with breaks in between, we've been studying Pirkei Avot. We're at a certain section of Pirkei Avot, which is pretty interesting and exciting. Really about the topic tonight of taking small things seriously and the power of taking small things seriously. Okay, so this is the statement of a great teacher, a great rabbi by the name Ben Azai, the son of Azai. They didn't name his name himself because he didn't become a rabbi himself, and his legacy was only in the name of his father. This was a young kid who died at a young age, but since young people can also be filled with wisdom, if someone is filled with wisdom, we will quote and teach their teachings as well. Shira, the fire is making a lot of noise. I forgot to, I normally turn it off. I don't like to ask her to do stuff, but I don't want to bore you for any more minutes than I am. Okay, so this is his statement. A great teacher that died young, but yet still Judaism values wisdom no matter who it comes from, even if it comes from my kids. And this is what he said. Ben Azai used to say, guys, bear with me, because this is really, really amazing stuff. Havei ratz lemitzvah kala. We're going to relate this to our life right here, everyone that's here. Run to do a good deed that's not that important. Equally as an important one. Run to things that seem insignificant if it's good, as much as you would for things that are very significant, that the world looks on as phenomenal. Why? We'll see. And he says, run away from doing bad, because doing good, doing a mitzvah causes you to do more good. Doing bad causes you to go down a hill and do more bad, and downhill, get into an argument. Starts there, and it goes down and down and down, down to the pit. And then he says, because the reward of doing good is good, and the reward of doing bad is bad. I'm sorry you guys are standing. That makes me feel uncomfortable, but there are seats over here. I would love if you guys could sit down. Do me a favor.
We have some here.
There are two seats over here.
And some seats over here. I want you to feel comfortable. This isn't prison. Okay. So this is the statement of Ben Azai, the son of Azai. No. Okay, he's getting a chair. And he said like this, smaller is sometimes bigger. Anyone got a reason, a good reason why sometimes things that are not as important? Let me just, before we get delve into some ideas, let me give you an example. Okay, saving someone's life. Pretty cool, right? If someone's drowning, that seems like the greatest thing you can do. If you're able, a great swimmer, and you know that you're not going to put yourself in danger, and you can dive in there and save that person, I mean, that's Facebook worthy, you know? Someone will post about it. Phenomenal. Like, that's it. Done. You're awesome. That seems like a very important good deed, and it actually is a mitzvah. Because just like when you save someone's... there's a commandment that you shouldn't stand on your brother's blood idly, meaning like if someone's about to die, don't just stand there and say, oh, okay, I'll watch it and leave it. You have an obligation to actually be proactive and get up and save the person. So it's a mitzvah to save someone's life. Also, it's a mitzvah to save someone's property. If you see someone's money being lost, you have a mitzvah to go and quickly save that money that's being lost if you can. All the more so someone's body. So if someone's about to die, you have a requirement and you're doing a tremendous thing. When you save a person's life, a person is a whole world, you're doing something tremendous. But our rabbis say that there's other things that are great that are also like giving a person's life. Giving a person life. What is it? Smiling. That's also, listen to what he said. The Talmud in Ketuvot says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan would say, Tov hamalbin shinayim lechavero. It's good, it's better. Somebody who whitens his teeth, or her teeth, for their friend, much more than giving them to drink milk. As it says, Uleven shinayim mi chalav, it's better teeth than milk. Both are white, yet smiling, when you show your teeth, means a real smile, a genuine smile, not just one that you want to look good on the camera because you think your teeth are crooked. I'm talking to myself, so you smile like this, right? But when you're genuinely happy, you don't care about your teeth, you show them out, you know, you smile from one side to the other. That smile is greater than feeding someone milk. What would that be? If someone's hungry, they've not eaten, they're thirsty, and they need some nourishment, that milk is a great one. You give them milk, they'll feel a little better. It's better to smile than to physically feed someone, because that can save somebody's life. You give him a good energy. Hey, what's up, man? The guy's not feeling so good. You give them a happy energy. You show attention to that person. You show that you accept them. That is an amazing feeling you can give them, much greater than feeding them milk. So what would you say is greater? Saving someone's life? Or giving someone a smile?
Saving someone's life.
And it is greater. But don't ever underestimate the power of a true smile. One rabbi says, your face is public property. Meaning, that's what everyone sees. And I don't mean that people can bash it. I'm talking about the fact that everyone sees it. If you want to know the true person of who you are, right? One of the things that's very intimidating to me is if I get stopped by a police officer and he's wearing a mask, he's wearing a helmet, and I don't see who he is. It's intimidating. You're having someone talking to you, but you don't really see his face. It's scary. You don't know why? Because a panim, a face in Hebrew, panim, it tells me the inside of the person. If I really want to recognize someone, it's the face. In fact, in photography, anyone who's into photography, you take pictures, people are taking pictures of wars or whatever's going on in the world. It's always about the person's face in the war. It's always about a face that makes the image so much deeper than the situation itself. The wrinkles, the expression, every little part of your face teaches me about what's going on with that person at that moment. A psychologist can never help someone if they don't see their face as much. And that's, by the way, very important. Why it's so important dating in real life, in person, or meeting people in person. Meeting someone in person allows you to see the inner depth of a person, not just the person superficially, like it's very easy for us to do. But that sit down, there are many times where people say to me, oh, I don't know, I'm not interested. What's her name again? Okay, let me just, and I hear the keyboard going tick, 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 tick. I know exactly where you're going. Doesn't work. But I'm not saying that someone has to be, there are certain levels of attraction, I agree. But at the end of the day, there are so many times where you see someone in person and you're like, wow. But if I saw them in picture, I wouldn't have given them a chance. The face teaches me so much about a person, opens my attraction to the person. Not that I'm now going and I'm suddenly changing my whole being because I'm... No, this is reality. When I see someone in person and I see who they really are, my attraction can change completely from one side of the spectrum to the other. I do believe that if someone, let's say, is not attracted to someone, and let's say between 1 and 10, and, you know, that's how people talk nowadays. But if it's 1... If somebody feels between 1 and 5 with someone, then I don't believe you can actually transform that to something between 5 and 10, right? You can't be on the upper side if you really feel like, bleh. So I don't think that there's a chance. I'm not trying to be like super open-minded here. that there's a chance that if you sit and you talk for hours on end, maybe there will be an attraction. Yeah, we have some basic logic, you know. But at the end of the day, if there is a level of attraction, it can grow. That is for sure, and it's a fact, and that's in person where you see the face. So there's a power in a person's face. That is the greatness, back to what we were talking about, the greatness of smiling to someone. Saving someone's life might be an amazing thing, but smiling to someone, showing your face and giving them true joy can lift someone up and do tremendous things that you can never know about. You never know the ripple effect of small good actions and how they can affect you. So that's what he says. Don't ever underestimate the small things that may not be Facebook worthy. Oh, you smile today. That's not a post that's worth showing off to anybody. But it's so worthy because that's something it actually can do daily as well. Saving someone's life, how often can we do it and how many people do it? So the one-off great thing, not many people can do that in a lifetime, but the daily smile is something you can. And that could show much more greatness than the one-off thing. I'll give you an example. Publicly showing that you love someone doesn't mean that you really love them. What would you say is a sign that this couple is in love? Yeah, well, privately for sure, but it could also be publicly. Most people in a materialistic world would say if they are showing signs of it, they're holding hands, they're really next to each other, they're always looking at each other, they're kissing each other. These are all external things. You can kiss someone that you don't like. That can happen. You know? Well, is that love? What do you think? That is a good point, though. Love is the definition. I'm going totally off topic. But the definition of love is the feeling of wanting this person with me. The extension of yourself to include the other in you, right? So you expand of yourself. You become bigger than yourself. And you completely include that person in you. Now, there are times where that love can be infringed, where you can have a couple that's married, but they're, or someone who's dating and they're very serious about marriage. And then suddenly they had a difficult conversation and they felt like, oh, I couldn't sleep that night. That doesn't mean you don't love the person. That means because you love them so much, you're uncomfortable because the space of including that person in it has been hurt. It's very painful when someone you want to include in your space has that connection has been broken. It's like, ah, I love her, but why did this happen? Right? I love that person, but it's like we're getting pulled. Me wanting to bring that person in my space has been broken. It's like, it doesn't mean the love is gone, but there's times where that can be infringed. And the actual definition of love is the feeling, the real feeling of I want to expand myself to a point where I can include this person in it. That is the moment of love. And it's a tremendous moment. And it can happen throughout a lifetime. It can go up and down. You can feel it's stronger. And sometimes it can be infringed. We have to be realistic about life. It's not like it's all rosy. Including someone in your life means that Including someone in your life means that, it's work. It takes a lot of work. Anyway, that's kind of off topic, but the point that I'm trying to get to is small things are huge. They're phenomenal. And that's why he says run to do small things, because they are huge, they are massive, they are great. And run to do them as much as you would for saving someone's life. That's his first statement. But why else is doing something small so great? And here's the real point of why, and he says it himself. Why? Because he said, mitzvah goreret mitzvah. Doing something small is so great because it causes you to do more. It inspires you. Here's an example. Last week, someone told me they're trying to deal with anger. The anger's a tough one. Last week, after my talk on Taka Tuesday, someone came up to me and said, you know, anger's one of the things I'm really working on, and I find it really hard. I get angry, and I get upset that I'm angry. I get angry that I'm angry. So I'm really challenged with this with this trait that I'm trying to deal with, overcome. How do I deal with it? And I realized straight away that the biggest problem this person is dealing with is they want to remove anger today, completely. And it doesn't work like that. No one can. It's a muscle, it's an art. Just like living with someone, what's the art of making a relationship work?
Sacrifice,
compromising. What's the art? It's self-discipline. That's the art. The art is working on myself, being humble. Now, there are times where we just gotta go, right? And this is toxic. I agree. But in general, the greatest part, living together physically, does that need any study? Does that need any education? No, you just open the door, you move in, and you make it work physically. But on a spiritual level, to actually make your relationship work, that's discipline. And by the way, that discipline is a great career of a lifetime. It's not a moment. Someone who gets married takes on two great careers. One is learning how to be married, right? As you are married, learning to deal with yourself and fight with yourself, which, by the way, starts way before marriage, from day one that you're born. And the other career you take on is hopefully being a parent one day. That's another great career. Does anyone learn about and study about that? Is there not? Were our parents perfect to us? Oh, no. So we say to ourselves, I'm not going to do that to my kids. Well, what did we study for that? Did we study anything to make sure we don't do the same to our kids? If there is anything that, and no one's perfect. Right? Is there anything that we said, I don't want my kids to see this? Well, what did we study to make sure that's not going to happen? Or some people just say, you know, I give up on the whole thing. Right? Forget kids then. Forget marriage. Well, I don't know many people that see themselves at the end of their life. Although right now they may say that. But I don't know many people that say that I see myself subconsciously at the end of my life without a family, without children, and without love. A long-lasting love, experiencing that at least in my life. Most people imagine themselves subconsciously with a long-term relationship and something which will build a family eventually, subconsciously. So the it's a deep need within every human being. People try and fight it, but there's an inner need for that. Anyway, family values is a pretty big one. It's a big Jewish thing. Okay. In case you didn't know. So small mitzvot make you grow. That's the point, he says. I don't know, I think I went a little off topic, but it's fine. Right? Small mitzvot, small things are so powerful because that is something you deal with every day. Oh, back to the person that was getting angry. Sorry. The ADD. So back to the person that getting angry, right? So she was saying, I get really angry. What was the problem? I want to deal with every time I get angry, it bothers me. I want to get rid of anger now, forever. It doesn't work like that. How do we get rid of anger? This is not an anger management talk, but I could tell you some tips. Nachmanides says, train yourself when you're not angry to speak on a lower level. To calm yourself, speak in a lower tone when you're not angry. When you're angry, that's it. The blood is there, the whole thing is happening, the body's doing its thing, and it comes out. But we're talking about prior, and even then, there's ways to deal with it. But the real work is the small steps before. I'll tell you where the real work starts. Where I put my hand in my pocket, take out the wrong key. Do I curse because of a key? Oh, right? Or I drive and I forgot my credit card in my house. I have all the other ones I forgot, and I didn't put it on my phone, right? So that minute that something doesn't work out my way, am I cursing? Because that's a step towards blowing up when I really get angered. If I get angered for that, if that's my problem, then what happens when someone actually challenges me in my life in a real way? And that's what causes me to scream and curse for 5 minutes. So imagine when someone actually does bother me, how much anger is built up in me. So one of the ways to deal with anger is before the anger. Nachmanides says that the way to do it, in his letter that he wrote to his son, he says, this is what's going to get you towards humility, which is the greatest trait of all types. And that's to speak in a lower tone. In other words, not only speak in a lower tone, But for sure, when things don't go my way, even in small things, train myself, build that muscle. It's a muscle. It's like going to the gym. It's a muscle. And what we need to do is train ourselves to say, okay, that should be my only problem, as opposed to throwing another curse, right? And when I do that, I've become stronger to anger. I've now built another muscle to anger. So the next time, something else will happen. Another challenge will come my way, and I'll be able to overcome that. It's like building muscle, literally. The first time, it was the key that bothers me. Now the key doesn't bother me anymore. There's other things that bother me. The emails, the bombardment of emails. Okay, so I won't go. By the way, whatever. Like this is me, right? The bombardment of emails. So what do you do? Just put it on spam, you know, like whatever it is, whatever is. You know, whatever it is. That's anger management.
That's why you
didn't respond. No, so no. No, I'm joking, right? But that's an example. It's the small increments that will eventually build someone who's absolutely mighty to fight his anger or her anger. So that's why run after small things. Because small things is where you're going to be built, not the big things. The big things are rare. They don't happen all the time. Obviously, if they come your way, you go for it. But it's the small things that really builds you. Maimonides says that it's much greater to give $1,000 a thousand times than to give $1,000 one time. That's a one-off inspiration, great. But to doing it many times, that makes me become 1,000 times better. In a small way, but that's 1,000 times, 1,000 actions of giving is way better than one action of big giving. And the same in a relationship. No one asked when Valentine's comes to suddenly wake up and buy this massive bouquet of flowers. It's going to die in a day. I mean, I'm a guy, but you know, girls really do like these flowers. But you get my point. The one flower is also powerful daily, weekly. That's powerful. It's the one-off message, the small message that really shows your greatness, not the big things that one-off come off your way. Someone gets into arguments. So what does he do? He buys massive gifts. Suddenly his house is filled with gifts. Why? Ah, that was that argument. That was from this argument. That fixed that argument. And the whole house is filled with gifts that remind you of all the arguments you had. Or it could be the other way around. Don't wait for the big things that happen so that you try and fix them. Do lots of small things with meaning, and they will have so much more of an effect. So the power of small is also, the first thing I said is, small is bigger sometimes, because it happens more often. But the main point is what he's saying. Run after small things, because that's what will build you. Someone wants to deal with anger? Yes, you will get angry within the next 10 years. If you say, okay, now from now on, I'm going to fight anger. You will be angry in a week from now, for sure. But at least you do it in increments and steps, because that's how you overcome the great battle of anger. That's a great battle of life. Okay, let me give you just about Judaism. Jewish pride. Someone says to me, Rabbi, I want to start wearing my kippah. After this racism that's going on, anti-Semitism, call it whatever they want. They say it's not anti-Semitism because Semites are not only Jews. Whatever, the hatred for Jews. Right? Just like, wake up. Right? The fact that you said it's good that the Holocaust happened. That's ridiculous. Right? And so that kind of environment is not healthy. So what do you say? Some people say, I'm done. I'm going to hide myself a little more. Some people say, I'm going to go the opposite. I'm going to wear my kippah now. Show Jewish pride. I love that. Okay, that's what I do. I need to maybe wear a hat more, you know, so because I'm already wearing the kippah. So show Jewish pride. So what do? So you say, I'm going to start wearing it 24 hours for every day. Well, if you can, great. But increments, maybe do it just for Shabbat. That's cool. No, but that means I'm not a good enough Jew. I'm going to do it partly. Judaism is great even in parts. No one's perfect. I want to do Shabbat. No one says you can't do Shabbat for an hour. Take your phone away, put it aside,
and do Shabbat, light candles once, but it's religious. I don't have an answer for that, honestly, but it's religious. What does that even mean? It's a great experience of connecting to your inner self. I like that religious. That's an awesome religious, right? Just putting away your technology and getting to know your inner self. But I don't do the full Shabbat. So what? You could do an hour. Could you do 2 hours? Could you do three? And eventually that's how you grow to being able to actually be a mentor, a teacher to your children one day, where Shabbat is real for you and it will be real for your kids also. But Shabbat doesn't, people tell me, I'm going to do Shabbat one day for my kids, for sure. Well, are you doing it now? What are you doing to get towards Shabbat now? Not much. I don't speak like that to people in person. You know, I'm a little softer than that. But you get the idea. What are we doing now to get there? You can't expect that suddenly the switch is going to happen. I'm going to do it. It doesn't work. Life doesn't work like that. Life works in increments, in small steps. That's why he says run for small things, because when you do, the small leads to a lot more greater things. And this is in every aspect of Judaism. Here, I wrote another example. Building a building. It's in my life right now because we're building in the back. Hopefully, please God, very soon. We just got our permits.
Wow.
Okay. So it is. It deserves it. For California, it's a big deal. So building works in stages. This is what I've learned about buildings. You can't put a roof before you actually put the foundations and the building. You can't get to the top, have the rooftop deck from the first second. It goes in stages. You got to go to the foundation first. Slow. And not only does it go in stages, but you also have to have inspections every part of the way. What does the inspection mean? Am I happy with, am I doing this for the right reasons? Am I healthy here? Is this good for me? Before I say, some people, they say, okay, let's build the whole thing in 1 minute. But then you didn't check the electrical. You didn't check all the stages before you close up. You got to make sure that everything's in its right place. So building, besides for actually the fact that you build, it has to take stages. It has to take steps. And we have to have that annoying inspector come and check even every step of the way. You say no. Okay, so, you know, well, so not to that extent. But we need within ourselves, that's a lesson for life. We need within ourselves in every stage, there are some people that say to me, Rabbi, I love Shabbat. From then, next week, I'm keeping the whole Shabbat. I'm like, wait, yo. So, yeah, that's crazy. You got to take it easy. That's not Judaism. That's actually a little cultish. Like, why is this happening? Now, if it really is truly inspired, it's something that's built off time, and it really makes sense to the person, and he's wait, fine. But things, when it comes to growth, in any aspect, I'm using Shabbat as an example, but any aspect, anger, it has to come in increments. It has to come in stages. And that's what we're saying here, just like building a building. That's how it is. You first feel confident, you get the inspections, and then you build to the next step. Then you build to the next step, and you can't go too quickly. Why is this so important? Why is it important to constantly grow? Run to one mitzvah so you can do another one, to do another. Why is this so important? Does anyone know? Okay, because I'm Jewish, so I'm talking about mitzvot. So, you know, run to do mitzvahs. Okay, but really, why is it so important? For instance, anger management. So what? I get angry. So what if my key gets in my pocket, the wrong key comes out and I curse? So who cares? No one's even watching. Why is this so important? Why did he say run for it?
I would say growth and change is important because if you stay the same, time is still going to move and change without you. So it's really like if you don't change, you're moving backwards. You have to be able to grow as times change and your environment changes.
So you're all touching on the right idea. And it's basically, this is the point of life. This is the point of you living. If a person comes in this world the same as he leaves this world, right? Obviously, if he didn't have a choice, that's not what we're talking about. But somebody who's no different when he's 60 as he was when he's 10, then who has he become? Someone who consumed a little more? ate some more, worked a little more. But what have we become? Just another thing in this universe. What defines us, what makes us us growing and becoming, learning from our mistakes and becoming greater. Not only this, but this is the greatest thing. It is the definition of happiness. What is the definition of happiness? I wrote it down somewhere and I've lost it. I gave it on my other class. I don't see it for some reason. Oh, how do you know someone has happiness? Simcha. How do I know someone has true sense of happiness? Listen to this. You feel, and this is because I'm saying it, okay? No one else. You feel like you are expressing your higher self in the world. It feels like I'm in the right life, in the right place, in the right relationship, doing the right job. I'm fulfilling a deep sense of meaning, purpose, and higher calling. And here is a study, not by me. Oh, before I say this study, this is what Judaism says, and let's go to the scientific study after, because it's mind-blowing. Look at what you say. This is Shlomo HaMelech, Solomon. He says in Kohelet, chapter 6, Kol amal ha'adam lefiu. Everyone works all the time, and most of it is for your mouth. Meaning to be consumed, whether it's food or clothing or stuff. Basically, materialism. We always work for what? Hours on end. Listen to the bus, fill the thing. For work, so that we have a little more so we can live, and then we can eat, and then we can sleep, and we can rent, and we can pay our car, and live, and comfortable. That's most of what we do. However, v'gam ha'nefesh lo temaleh. Know that your soul will never be satiated from that. You may fill your body, but your soul will never get filled from that alone. And this is, and don't get me wrong, work can give a person a lot of sense and meaning and purpose. That's true. But don't think stuff, the more you eat or the more things you'll have is where happiness will be. That is where we make a big mistake. Listen to this. Dopamine is, you know, chemical in the brain. Why not just go, you know, get some dopamine, go, no, don't put any effort, throw some in, and we're good to go. Huh? Why can't we all just live off dopamine? Huh? Dopamine, right? Like, just give me. Why do we all do that? So this is a discovery. And this is, by the way, one of the great studies that many people are trying to understand. Why dopamine doesn't make people happy still, even if they have it. Meaning, it's a reaction to if you are happy, right? But why is it that if people have dopamine, they're not necessarily happy? There are many people that take drugs, they feel the high of the dopamine, then it goes back down. Why can't it stay? Why is it not making us happy?
It's not intrinsic.
Okay.
It's not real.
It's not real. But when I feel happy, that does happen. So listen to what he says. This is a study all saying exactly what this doctor says, that he did some research. Dr. Robert Lustig, who wrote The Hacking of the American Brain, and based on many other studies, he says like this. The difference between, we need to realize that there's a difference between pleasure and happiness. The brain chemistry, this is the brain chemistry difference, and how chasing pleasure doesn't create happiness. Pleasure is a feeling, but that doesn't necessarily guarantee that I'm gonna have happiness from that feeling. Okay, it's a feeling that I get. I have sugar, phew, right? It's like, you, right? I go on the spike. But then I finish, it goes back down. Why? Because pleasure is something which is physical, which doesn't last. For instance, I give somebody in this room who loves, anyone like chocolate? Okay, we do a real study and we find the person that loves chocolate the most. We get you the most expensive cake that we can find, filled with all types of chocolate, very expensive Belgium chocolate, if that's what you're into, and Swiss chocolates, really thick, rich, cost us $2,000. A really expensive cake. We bought a cake this week, costed us $50. I know, don't ask, I didn't buy it. But whatever. You get this chocolate cake, and we split it into 10 pieces for you. We take the person that loves chocolate the most in this room, we split it into 10 pieces. The first piece, dopamine. Second piece, also, but not as great. Until you get to the last piece. The last piece will never give you as much dopamine, no matter how great and how much you love chocolate, as much as the first piece of cake that you had. Why? And the answer is because that's how dopamine works. It's a physical sensation. It's based on how, but it doesn't guarantee that I have a meaningful life. And the truth is that happiness is defined by the journey of me, myself, growing. I find tremendous joy in working towards me becoming. It's a goal that I have towards myself. And in Judaism, it's really to the next world. When we leave this world, it's what we become. For instance, someone goes to the gym. This Rabbi Tatz gives over a great example. He says, for instance, someone goes to the gym. Imagine someone's coming, never been to the gym before. You walk in, you see a guy working out. He's like, what? Why? You pay money to get here. Not only are you here pumping, but you're paying money, sweating, screaming. And then you look at the person and you say, okay, so what are these weights for? Where are they going? Are you taking them anywhere? Up and down? Where are you actually taking them? Where is this even going? No, this is what I enjoy. And the person says, I enjoy it. And this sweat. Why are you enjoying it? And the answer is, it's not the actual physical job that makes you the pleasure. Well, there is a dopamine in the physical workout also, but it's the goal towards something that makes me feel joy. It's me working towards something that also gives me a sense of joy. Here's another example. Okay, if I give somebody a job that's worth a lot of money, for instance, to build, he's an architect, and I ask you, please build me the George Washington Bridge. Okay, that's George Washington. You build me the bridge, is it? Did he build it? No. So yeah, like, you give me the architecture for the bridge. And imagine that guy's got a year. He's going to be paid a tremendous amount of money, but he's got a year to figure out the whole process. And there's a time limit. And the person doesn't sleep at night. He doesn't sleep in the day. He's busy working hours on end, trying to make sure that everything is perfect. And you might look at the person, not much sleep, no attention to anyone else besides for this bridge. And you look at him and he's actually fulfilled. He's happy. You ask, why? Well, how can this be? No sleep, no. What's going on? The answer is he's working towards something. And the same is, ultimately, the greatest level is within ourselves when we work towards becoming the greatest person that I can be, because that will give me tremendous happiness. Okay, and then he says, know that as much as good causes you to do more good, and we're talking about small things, bad causes a person to do more bad. Meaning, it's also a muscle. You slip one time and you never normally curse when the key comes out, which is wrong. You will get angry again for even smaller things next time. So no, you better stop it. Because if you don't, it's only going to go downhill. Bad causes a person to do more bad and more bad and more bad. And eventually that's what's going to define you also. So run to do good, even small bits of good, because that will build you. Run away from doing small bits of bad, because that would also destroy you. What's the big deal? I got upset about a key. Yeah, but if you're upset about that, and if that's the end of your world, then when something really problematic happens, you will react much worse. And you won't be able to have the muscles to overcome your big challenges. Okay? There's a great rabbi who always used to, whenever he has something, oh! He dropped his coffee in the morning. Oh! That should be my only problem today. You know, that was his way of reacting. It was phenomenal to watch. Genuinely, he wasn't just faking it out. He was genuine about it. Okay, our rabbis say, why is it so important to run away from doing something bad? It says like this, when someone does something bad and repeats it, what happens? You do something bad one time, oh, okay, whatever, I'm in the grocery store, I'll just take a few candies here, put them in my pocket, no one's watching, right, and walk out. Why is that a problem? You do it once, v'shinaba hutralo, eventually it comes okay for you to do it. You justify it. And then a rabbi says, really? You justify it? No, you don't really justify it, but you start imagining as if it's okay to do it. You know, it's not like you say it's okay, but you know deep down it's not okay, But you start saying, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. It's not that bad until everything's not that bad. And we end up in the worst relationship. We end up in the worst of places. And it all started. You know how they say, right? The biggest divorces started with the smallest things. You know, it was like the smallest stuff. That's it. Because that's where it starts. And then it goes daily. And then everything comes a problem. That's the problem. Then there's other problems. And there's bigger problems. And it just goes until, so that's why it's important whenever someone feels like there's something they can work on, stop it. Don't let it continue because it can only get worse from there on. That's what he says. If you do it once and you do it again, it eventually comes justified. And then your next challenge is a stage lower. It's like going down the ladder. What's it like? It's like the bath of Amalek. You heard about this one before? So the first people to fight the Jews after they got the Torah was a group called Amalek. And what did they do? They said, hey, let's get the Jews. They're not so spiritual. They got the Torah from God, whatever. They were very powerful at this point. Let's take them down. And they go suicide mission to fight the Jews. Right? The Jews left Egypt. Suicide mission to fight the Jews. And what do? They die. They didn't make it. The Jews managed to save themselves, of course. And let's eat. We win. Now let's eat. Right? So we saved ourselves. And what happens? The rabbis say, what was so bad about Amalek? Amalek is the worst. What was so bad about them? They cooled down the bath. That's what it says. Like somebody where it's so hot, no one wants to go in it. Then once the first person goes in, the water is cooled down. And everyone says, it's not that bad. We can also do it. So it's the same with us in our life also. When we first see something as a kid, we see something that's wrong, we're like, no way, that's terrible. And then we get what we call desensitized. We say, it's not that bad. And we don't even care about it as much. And it comes normal. And that's the danger of life, where we say what happens is bad and we keep going further and further and further into that bad. He says, run away from it. If somebody, God forbid, you hear about, there's a lot of crime going on recently. You hear about a shooting. The last thing you would do is run towards the place where the shooting is happening. Unless you know you can save someone. But the last thing you do is run there. Oh, where is it going? Is it coming towards me? Yeah, let me see where the person is. Who is he? Let me take a picture of him. The last thing you want to do is go near someone that is dangerous. Run away from it. And he says the same within ourselves. If we see that we're going in a path, a trajectory that's not healthy, stop it. Because if you don't, it will go worse. It goes downhill. Okay, and then he finally says the reward for doing good is good. Meaning, this is a very philosophical teaching. But basically, if you do good in this world, you can't be rewarded with physical stuff for it. Because physicality is not things that last. It's all imaginary, right? If you look at the physical world, what is it? It's all atoms and electrons moving. It's really based on nothing. We hype ourselves up. Oh my goodness, that food is amazing. You eat it, you know, it was great. Second time, it's not that great. Because the physical world is all hyped up. What is it mostly made of? Electrons, moving electrons. It's mostly nothing. They say that if you take the mass of Earth and put it into one ball, you'll get the size of the universe. You'll get the size of a basketball. It'll be as heavy as the world. But really, the world is made of nothingness, right? An atom, what is an atom? Electrons moving at great speed. It's like a fan. You see three blades on the fan. You turn it on the highest speed, and what happens? It looks like a plate. That's how physical reality really is. It's mostly just movement of electrons. It's mostly nothingness. So if you think about physicality, there's no physicality in this world, although it's as real as we feel it, but there's no physicality that's ultimate. And that's why when someone overcomes their challenges, there's no real place of getting rewarded in this world for it. And he says the reward for good is that you get more opportunity to do more good. What's it like? It's like a king that tells one of his workers, he has many people that work for him, and he sees this person that does good construction. He says, I want you to build my palace. Oh, which one? A small one. Besides, you know, it's my vacation little small home that I have in some island. I want you to build it there. It's only $100 million job. Okay, I'll do that. After he completes that job, he says to, the king says to him, if you complete it right, I'll give you a bigger job. Something greater to do. And the person finishes it right. He gets a greater job. The king says, oh, that's beautiful. Now let me give you a $1 billion job. And then eventually the person becomes greater and greater and greater. Just like in work, that's how it works. Also in our life, when we start working on ourselves, eventually we get more opportunities to do more good. You do good once, you now get an opportunity to do more good. So in this world, according to Judaism, when you do good, you get rewarded to do good, to do more good. Right? So you do good, you get rewarded with more opportunities to do more good. Right? What's the saying? If you want a if you want a job done, what do you do?
Do it yourself.
Either do it yourself or ask the busiest person you know, right? Is that the way they say it? Or?
Yeah.
If you want to get a job done, ask the busiest person you know to do it. So in life as well, if you want to become great, we start in stages and eventually we become the people that are given the opportunity to do things that we never knew we could do. Okay, so that's really the statement of this teaching. By the way, I'll finish off with this and maybe a little story also. There is a saying like this: "Pitchuli petach echad shel tshuva kechuda shel machat." When it comes to life and growth, you say to yourself, "I can never do that." You look at other people, and they've achieved amazing things, and you think to yourself, "I can never do that. No way, I'll be able to do that." For instance, the person that looked at me and said, "I can never overcome my anger. It's so hard. I don't know how to deal with it." So when you look at life and the big things of life, you say to yourself, there's no way I can do it. But how can you really do it? The answer is in increments. That's another message that we learn. That we are taught that when a person says, I'll do my bit, I'll open a needle. It says, open a hole of a needle. Take a needle, you put it through a hole. Sometimes it's difficult. You try to get it through material, it's stuck. It's hard. But eventually, what happens? God says, you do your part. Open that, put that needle through. Say, I'll try. And eventually, I will open you a world. God says, "Ptachim shiyu agalot ukroniyot nichnasot bo." Wagons, cars, trucks can go through it. It's obviously metaphorical. But the idea is, you do a little bit that you think is impossible. I'll try. I know I can't be perfect, but I'll try a little bit. And eventually you'll go to places that you never knew you were able to go to. That is the power of running after small things. Because you also, more than anything, you learn to become a great person. But more than anything, you learn so much more about yourself. You reveal greatness that you never knew you could actually achieve. And that's the greatest thing, is when you actually see, look back 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and you say, I never believed in a million years I can be in such a place. And 20 years later down the line, you are. Just this week, I met someone who was in rehab. He was in the lowest of places. And today, he's running a business for someone. Spending a very big business. He's got a tremendous responsibility on him. And I was just amazed at this person's ability to go from there, rehab, from the work, they've given up on him. His family, everyone gave up on him. And now where he is, running an entire business and a very big business. When he was there in that place, did he think he can ever get to this place? No. But the way he got there was through increments. He said, okay, today I'm going to put my shoes in the right place. I'm going to make my room a little more organized. I'll take the drugs in the night, but in the morning, if I wake up, I'll put my stuff in the right place. It's even something small like that, but it's a step towards greatness. And eventually, he's able to get out of rehab, and not only that, be trusted by people to a point where he's running an entire business. Phenomenal. Investors put lots of money in this person. So they obviously believed in him to a point where and he revealed all of his inner abilities that he never knew he had. So that's my message to everybody. I wish that we all value and run to small things and know that those small things will build us. They will make us. They will make people appreciate us. And us realize and reveal our inner powers that we never knew we had. And that's the way to getting it. So this is from Ben Azai, a small kid who died at a young age, but said such wisdom. You know, that's Judaism. We say that no matter who it's coming from, if it's wisdom, we'll take it. And this is one of them. So, shkoyach, like they say in Yiddish. All right, thank you for joining, and I hope you guys have a great rest of your week.